Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. It is Monday, February 4th. My name is Rob Doster. I have a fun conversation on the way for you today. I was able to catch up once again with my buddy from Stadium and my buddy from the Good and Plenty podcast, the one and only Jeff Goodman. We had a nice conversation about what is going on with the Michigan schools, whether or not we trust Kentucky or Kansas or North Carolina more. There's a lot of stuff about what happened in the week of college basketball. Before I get into that conversation, I want to say something really quick on Silvio D'Souza and the ruling that the NCAA made on the Kansas big man over the weekend. I don't think there's really all that much to discuss here. When it comes down to it, what this decision, where the NCAA essentially suspended him for two seasons, shows is how they have backed themselves into a corner in this amateurism argument. Silvio D'Souza had absolutely no idea that any of this stuff was happening. His handler, somebody that he was supposed to trust, accepted $2,500 from an Adidas consultant and then agreed to accept $20,000 more from that same Adidas consultant in exchange for D'Souza going to Kansas. The reason he needed that second $20,000 payment was to get himself out from a $60,000 payment that he accepted from a Maryland booster to try to funnel D'Souza to Maryland. Silvio had no idea this was going on. His handler was somebody he was supposed to be able to trust coming over to this country from Angola, helping him navigate the process of going through the high school ranks and to the college ranks and hopefully to the professional ranks. But the NCAA did not have a choice in terms of the decision that they had to make here. They had to come down hard on D'Souza because this is the way that their rules are formulated. This is the way that their rules are structured. And anytime moving forward, if a player ever got caught accepting impermissible benefits, or their parents did, or their handlers did, or their AAU coaches did, or whatever happens, that player could just say, I didn't know that it was going on, and the NCAA would just have to throw their hands up and say, okay, there's nothing we can do. We've set this precedent. And that is not something that they're going to do. So there was never any other option here. D'Souza was always going to get the book thrown at him because in federal court under oath, they have an Adidas consultant testifying and saying that he agreed to pay the handler for Silvio D'Souza $22,000 to get him to go to Kansas. This was always going to be the result, and this was always going to be what happened. The NCAA was going to have to throw the book at an innocent kid because somebody that he trusted to do right by him didn't do right. That's the logic circles that the NCAA has walked themselves into when it comes to their amateurism rules. And there's nothing else to say about it. It's ridiculous. D'Souza is the one that's paying the price by an organization that is supposed to be about helping kids better their station in life. I don't think that they did that here. And it's wrong. Let's get into that conversation with Jeff Goodman. And now let me welcome on everybody's favorite reporter from Stadium, from the Good and Plenty podcast, one Mr. Jeff Goodman. Jeffrey, how are we doing, sir?
Why, it is everybody's favorite reporter. Like, not just from Stadium. It should just be, like, everybody's favorite reporter, period. Right?
Yes. That's okay. What I was trying to say. You're not very good at listening. Right. It's everybody's favorite reporter. He's from Stadium. Do you need to spell it out more clearly? Is that good?
No, I was a little bit confused there. I just wanted to make sure we had it correct here. And yeah, I mean, listen, everybody loves me right now. NC State fans are clamoring for more treatment. One NC State fan right now wants me to show him the text message that I sent to Kevin Keats after sending out a tweet that Kevin Keats should be the offensive coordinator for one of the Super Bowl teams last night because they were inept scoring. And again, I've known Keats forever, so I was having some fun. So I sent him a text just to make sure he knew I was just having a little bit of fun, and I would have done that to anybody who I've known for 15 years like I have with Kevin Keats. So these NC State fans want me to show them the text message to Kevin Keats, and I won't do it.
Yeah, you shouldn't do that. For people that don't know, NC State scored 24 points in a 40-minute basketball game as a ranked team at home against Virginia Tech, who didn't have their starting point guard, Justin Robinson. They lost by 23 in a game where they held a team to 47 points.
Not very pretty. So whatever joke you get, you kind of deserve. Like, whatever the butt of whatever joke anybody throws out there about you for scoring 24 points, you kind of got to take it.
If if you're an NC State fan, you just look. You got another game coming up this week. People are going to forget about it. Crazy stuff's going to happen. You just got to spend the next couple of days taking it. That's the rules. It's the laws of fandom. Every other fan in the country is allowed to make fun of you. Reporters are allowed to make fun of you. You just got to take it. You scored 24 points at home and lost by 23 when a team scored 47 points.
And listen, if you're NC State, you should feel pretty fortunate right now because – I mean, think about it. You should have lost four of your last five. The one win you got here, you should have been a four-game losing streak. The one win you got was a gift from Marquise Reed and Clemson, missing four free throws. Otherwise, you'd be losing five of your last six, I'm sorry, and out of the NCAA tournament. I think, as I said to them, the NC State fans 2 weeks ago, I think they're a fringe tournament team. And they were like in the top 25 at that point. And everybody's like, oh, you idiot, you idiot. And I like Kevin Keats. I was not a fan of Mark Godfrey from the day he got hired. I said it was a terrible hire, and they all got on me about that. I'm a fan of Kevin Keats. I think he's a good coach. I actually think he's further ahead of where he should be with NC State, but they're a fringe tournament team, period.
I don't know if I would call them a fringe tournament team at this point because I do the bubble banter every day, and I look at this stuff every single day, and their profile is not as bad as a lot of profiles out there. But I will say this. They are not as safe as NC State fans want to make it out to be. They have one quadrant one win right now over an Auburn team that has zero quadrant one wins.
There you go.
That's their only quadrant one win. Yes, they're 4-0 against quadrant two games, but they also have that quad three loss to Wake Forest. And it's not like they played, you know, a monster non-conference schedule. I believe that their non-conference schedule ranked like 349th or something like that. They're one of like the five worst non-conference schedules in the sport of college basketball. And you have one quadrant one win against the team that has zero quadrant one wins. You're in the tournament as of today, but you might be like a 10 or an 11 seed. As of today, if you put a bracket, together today, there are not going to be 36 at-large teams that are going to have a better profile than them. I promise you that. Trust me. I look at this stuff like every day for the last 2 weeks, and there's not going to be, you cannot find them out there. But
yeah, I mean,
with the way that
I'd rather Lipscomb. Throw Lipscomb in there.
Yeah, Lipscomb, Wofford. But here's the problem with it. Like when we do our bracket projections, we take the team in first place in our whatever league it is. The team that's in first place is going to be the one that we put in as the auto bid, and Wofford is the auto bid. So you mentioned the Super Bowl. I do want to talk to you about that, but it's not necessarily because the Patriots won. I know you're a Patriots fan. We're not talking about that.
I'm not a Patriots fan.
Yes, you are. You're boss. Really, you're not all Boston everything. I know you wear Tom Brady jerseys to bed at night. You have Gronk underwear on right now.
I do love Gronk. I do love Gronk. I'll admit that. But I'm not. Listen, I can't stand Bill Belichick. Can't stand him because I had to cover those press conferences years ago. I had to cover the Patriots. There was nothing worse than covering a Bill Belichick press conference. Nothing. Zero. Ever.
Well, let's talk about that then. Here's the thing. It's a little different. What I wanted to talk to you about was, did you see at the very end of the game with Tracy Wolfson when she got caught in that like scrum of people trying to get that interview with Tom Brady?
I still haven't seen it because I had to watch a game with my wife at a sports bar. We dropped my daughter off at a friend of hers about an hour away from our house at like 5:30. So we had to scramble to find a good place to watch it. We found a sports bar not too far, like 20 minutes from there. So when the game ended, we had to rush out, drive from there about 25 minutes, get my daughter, drive home. I didn't see the kiss, the Tom Brady kiss, which I thought was the greatest thing of all. The kiss on the lips to Robert Kraft might have been the best thing of the night. I still can't believe it. Still can't believe it. Yeah. So anyway, what happened with Tracy Wolfson?
Well, she went out there. You know, she's the sideline reporter for CBS Sports. They have they're the rights holders, so she gets the first interview with Tom Brady. But what happened was there was just such a crush of people around him that she could barely get there, and like they still had her with the live mic, and you could hear the conversations that people were having with her, but it wasn't bad. It was like, there was one guy that was like, oh Jesus, are you okay? Like, did that really just happen? And then there are other people just being like, back up, give her room. And Brady kind of worked his way through like Kraft and all the other hugs goodbye. But I was really impressed with her like sticking it out in the middle, like legitimately in a scrum of probably like 150 to 200 photographers trying to get pictures of Tom Brady like hugging and apparently kissing Robert Kraft and like talking to other players and stuff like that. But I was just impressed with the fact that she stuck with it and she ended up getting the interview. Like, I don't know if I would have lasted that long in there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, for me, when I did sideline, it was nice and easy. You know, the only time, who was it? Somebody outran me once, and I didn't get him. Or no, it was like Buzz Williams at the tournament in L.A. in Anaheim a couple years ago, somehow got by me. I don't know how. He's not fast. He's kind of portly. Like, I don't understand how he was portlier then. He's lost some weight, obviously. Looks much more in shape now. But somehow he got by me a couple years ago. I was so upset. Then there was one time, you know, if it's at the end of the half and it's like a close score, like, you know, it's whatever, 31-31, you got to try to figure out, or maybe it's like 34-29 and you're like, all right, I want to get, I don't know, Villanova's playing whoever. I want to get the other coach because they're up 34-29. And then Villanova goes on a run in the last like 30 seconds. And they take the lead. Well, it was at Barclays, I think. I'm pretty sure it was at Barclays. And it's hard to get from one side to the other from behind the benches. There's just not a lot of room. So a guy had to like full on sprint behind the benches to try to get there, to get Jay Wright as he was walking off. And it's maybe my first or second year doing sideline. I did some bad sideline interviews. This might've been the worst. It was terrible. I was like rattled. And even Jay, like, I think he felt bad for me because I couldn't get out the first question. It was like a complete shit show.
Look,
it was good.
Look, there are things that you are good at, man, but maybe TV wasn't one of them.
Yeah, TV's, you know, well, sideline wasn't one of them. Like, I feel like sideline was the toughest part of it because as a reporter, you've got all this information and you want to be able to show how smart you are. Because you have all this information, and they want you to ask these kind of how, what, why questions that are open-ended. And then the sideline hits, you got like 20 seconds, and they're like, all right, wrap, wrap, wrap. And you're like, what do you mean? I got all the – I've said nothing. Like, I haven't said anything to give anybody any real information. All I've done is give the basic. So I felt like sideline was setting me up to fail. And I always have the deer in headlights look too, when they first went to me, for sideline. I got better at it the last year or two, cause I really didn't give a shit, about how I looked or whatever. But early on the first few years, it was like, and you'd stumble over words and it would affect you. But I think like whenever I was on like SportsCenter, those types of things, it was easy. Like
yeah,
those are easy.
Doing like the studio things and the stand-ups is not as hard as when you're on the live broadcast trying to talk through something while you have somebody yelling in your ear while you're trying to watch a basketball game and yeah, comprehend what is happening on the floor in front of you. You got like your mind's taking you in four different directions and you're trying to stay focused. That's why I'm always so impressed with like the play-by-play guys that can kind of keep things moving and yep, keep focus on the game and keep, you know, some of these analysts from going off in 17 different directions and just kind of keep things moving on a path. It's just, you know, it's not as easy as it looks. And, you know, I've only done two live television games and both of them, there were moments that I look back and, you know, I've watched the tape of them the same way you would watch a tape of a basketball game. And I'm like, oh God, I can't believe I did that.
Do you like my idea for the analyst mute button, by the way?
That should give you an option.
Right? Analyst mute button would be awesome. And again, no, I didn't. My idea was not for that, for Bill Walton. I actually love listening to Bill Walton for the most part. I mean, sometimes it gets a little carried away, but Bill Walton's the nicest human being in the world. Like, the best part of Bill Walton is whenever you see him, and I've worked with him several games and have seen him at other games, and like, he'll come up to me every time and be like, Jeff, Bill Walton. And I'm like, no, I know who you are. Like, I get it. You're like one of the greatest players of all time. Like, you don't need to say who you are. And he just does it out of like respect. He's just such a good human being. And that's what's lost with Bill Walton. Like, he is the nicest guy and he works his ass off to prepare. I saw him at Portland, PK80. That dude sat there for every practice all day, like literally from the start of the day, 8 o'clock in the morning till 6 o'clock, and sat there all day doing homework, getting stories and just talking to people.
Do you think that Dave Pasch actually likes him?
Like
How much of that whole relationship is just a
Pasch
bit?
Pasch loves him. No. Pasch likes him. Yeah, like I've worked with both of them. Dave Pasch is like elite level. He's got a lot of shit to him too. Like he's you could see it. I mean, you could tell the way he is. He's funny. He's sarcastic. He plays the part about as well as anybody can play the part with Bill Walton.
Awesome. Partnership is just so perfect because, like, look. Yep. It's great for the Pac-12 this year because there's absolutely no reason to watch Pac-12 basketball. Like I did a recap for people, you know, football's over. You know, here's a recap, everything you need to know about college basketball. And I tried to get like 250, 300 words about each conference, just a quick summary about it. And for the Pac-12, the header was the Pac-12 sucks. And then the entire body of what I wrote was, the Pac-12 sucks. And that was it. And I kept it moving. You don't need to know about the Pac-12 this year. The Pac-12 sucks, which is perfect for Bill Walton. But here's the thing that's great about it is you can watch those games and you don't have to worry about, like, you know, you watch Fran Fraschilla on the Big 12, you learn something during the broadcast. Yes. You watch Dan Dockich on the Big 10, you learn something during the broadcast. You know, you listen to Robbie Hummel on Purdue because you're going to learn something. You listen to Sean Farnham and Dallin Cuff when they're in studio because you're going to learn something from them. I don't need to worry about not learning anything from Bill Walton because I don't care about the Pac-12. I could just sit here and enjoy the absolute shit show that league is and listen to him tell his stories and rant. And Dave Pasch with like his dry one-liner, witty comebacks. Oh, they are just so perfect together.
Yes, they are. No doubt. Like there's some, that was one of the great things for me working when I did the ESPN, working with some of the people I did, especially the play-by-play guys like Pasch, you know, the Mike Cousinses, the Dave Flynn. I mean, the list goes on and on. Like really, really, really good people. And like you said, they have such a tough job. Like, I don't know how they do it and you know, get in and out of breaks the way they do, kind of keep everything moving, set guys up, and Pasch has got it. One of the tougher jobs for sure, dealing with Bill Walton and especially just because you don't know where he's going. Like, and there's no reeling him back in a lot of the time.
That's the thing about it is that you have no idea what he's going to say next. And I wonder how much of his – how much of it with him is shtick and how much of it is just like, that's kind of who he is.
I think it's him.
That's what happens when you do acid every day for, you know, the first 35 years of your life.
The best thing was when I texted Luke before I did the game with him last year at PK 80, I texted Luke Walton. I said, hey man, what do you think? Like how much of your dad's, all these random facts that he's got are like accurate. He's like, they're pretty much all accurate. I'm like, come on, no way. And so sure enough, during the broadcast, one of the things I did was like basically like an accuracy meter. And I wrote down like three or four crazy things that he said in the first half and went back in the second half, looked them all up on, you know, Google, whatever, you know, just try to see if they're accurate or not. Sure enough, like every one of them was accurate. It's amazing. It's amazing because you look like you're thinking like he's making this shit up. There's no way this is right about like this river in South Dakota, whatever it is, and how long it is. The guy like just knows these random things that like nobody else knows and nobody else cares about.
You've been to his house, right?
Yeah, the teepee.
Yeah, tell that story.
Yeah, that was like my first year in San Diego. Go to his house and he's got somebody who cooks. It was the whole crew there before that game. It was a San Diego State game. Had to be a San Diego State game, maybe the opening game of the year. And he has all of us back at his house, and he brings in a chef to cook for us. And you go out back, and it's like a forest. I mean, like legitimately, like all – I guess it was the house he got when he played for the Clippers years ago. They gave it to him. He's had it all this time, and – the rooms he's got all like devoted to different musicians. He's got like a room for like a Bob Dylan room, a Grateful Dead room, whatever. And then we walk out back and He shows us this teepee. He's got this big ass teepee, and we're in there. And I got a picture. I still have it on my phone. It might be my favorite picture I've ever taken in this job. And it's me, Bill, and his dog. I forget his dog's name right now. Damn, I forget it. I shouldn't forget it. In the teepee.
You had that as your Twitter avatar for a while.
Oh, I should have never kept it off. I mean, it's that good. And again, like the guy's just, he's genuinely just a good human being. And so what do you think of my now with the whole UCLA? Remember when the UCLA Alford got fired and everybody wrote there, who's next for a coach?
You said Bobby Hurley.
Yeah, I know. But do you remember who I put in there that nobody else put on that list?
Other than Bobby Hurley?
Yes.
I do not remember. Who was it?
Luke Walton.
Oh, yeah, you did, huh? So is he gonna? What's going to happen with that with the Lakers? Is he going to end up getting fired?
I don't know. They come here. They come to Boston on Thursday, the day before the trade deadline. They come to Boston. The Celtics, you know, obviously aren't going to be able to probably swing a deal for Anthony Davis now. The Lakers want to. Rich Paul's trying to manipulate the situation. It's a complete train wreck. But they come here on Thursday night, so that'll be an interesting one. But I felt like, if Luke Walton does get fired, let's say he doesn't make it through the year, which is kind of what it sounds like. Some people there, you know, want him out. If he's out, could he be a viable candidate at UCLA? Even though, yes, I know he's an Arizona grad. I get that. But he's also the son of Bill Walton. He's also the former Lakers coach. Would he even be interested? I have no idea if he'd even be interested. But to me, I think he'd be a pretty good higher.
He's been a college coach before, right? Wasn't he at Memphis? Am I making that up?
For like 2 weeks during the lockout.
That's right. That's what it was.
2 months, maybe 2 months. But it was a short stint. But I think Luke would be a hell of a recruiter if he wanted to get after it. Now, again, the question is, how hard does he want to work? And he can bring, like, what if that whole staff was fired? He'd bring Miles Simon with him. Another Arizona guy. I don't know if they'd be okay with that at UCLA, having a staff full of Arizona guys. But bottom line is they just want to win.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it might work, and it would make some sense. But he would have to go out and hire somebody that you know could get you players.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing about it. You have to get someone that you know can get you players. And that's why, you know, we talked about Fred Hoiberg being a fit at that job, even though he's not really going to be a guy that grinds on the recruiting trail, because, you know, we thought he would be smart enough to go out and hire somebody that could get him the players that he needs. And that's what Luke Walton would have to do. And, you know, I don't think I would not be shocked if he got the job and ended up having success there, because I think that could actually work. And, you know, honestly, I think with the way some of the mindset of some of the kids that come out of Southern California, I think that having a coach like Walton might actually work better than having a coach with the personality of, like, say, a Ben Howland or Steve Alford or somebody along those lines. Hoiberg would kind of fit in those lines as well. If I'm UCLA, I think that I probably still go after some of the other names before I go after Luke Walton. You know, if you can get Fred Hoiberg with the proven success that he's had at the college level, I think I would probably take that over Luke Walton to start. But I mean, it'd be very hard to say no to Bill Walton's son at UCLA.
You wonder if Hoiberg's just going to wait this thing out and see what pops in the NBA. And if he does, it's too late for college, isn't it? I mean, obviously UCLA is not going to wait that long. So maybe he'll have a better idea of what coaches are going to get fired in the NBA. And if he's got a shot at one of these jobs, I don't know. I mean, otherwise, you would think if your pick is Fred Hoiberg, well, why aren't we just getting it done now and let him start recruiting now?
I mean, I think it's up to him. Hasn't he said that he wants to – what he said something a while back, that he just wants to coach, right? Was that when he was being linked to like a GM job?
Right. He wants to coach. I talked to him about a month ago, and he definitely wants to coach. And again, I think ideally he'd like to coach in the NBA. But I just don't see that happening. I mean, I guess if Ryan Saunders failed, maybe Minnesota could look at him, and maybe that's what he's waiting for, to see kind of how that whole situation plays out in Minnesota. But To me, again, if I'm UCLA, and if I'm UCLA, I'm gonna swing for the big boys right now if I can, and you know, try to see if Tony Bennett's interested and all that, and kind of turn over every rock. But at some point, wouldn't you say to Fred Hoiberg, hey, listen, we need to know. We got to move here. We don't want to compete in April or March when all these other schools are firing guys. We don't want to compete with all these other potential openings. We want to get this thing done if we can now.
Speaking of Minnesota, did you see the clip of, I believe it was Richard Pitino's son that came up to him while he was on the sideline and told him he had to go to the bathroom? Oh, that was so funny.
And that's Richard Pitino. What people don't understand, like, he's the opposite of Rick. Like, Richard's, like, new age. Like, he doesn't get too rattled by things. He's super sarcastic. Doesn't take himself too seriously. You know, his son came up to him, and he looked over, and I'm sure his wife, and he was like, hey, can you take him to the bathroom, please? Like, and he just, like, kept coaching. Like some coaches would have been like, get the hell away. Like, I'm coaching, like, and gotten all pissed off at their kid. He didn't at all. Like, didn't at all. It was great.
Look, I have a kid that's about the same age that is, we're finally through the potty training phase. We're currently in, like, the nighttime potty training phase. But I still know that, like, we were at the grocery store the other day, and he's like, Daddy, I have to pee. I have to pee right now. And I'm like, oh, God. You gotta hold it. So we went out and he was like, Daddy, I really have to pee. So like I let him pee in the parking lot between the cars, and he thought that was the coolest thing in the world, was he got to pee in the parking lot. Hopefully my wife doesn't listen to this podcast.
Did you tell him, like, Daddy does that all the time?
No,
like,
I said don't do this unless it's an emergency, is what I said. But yeah, he wouldn't pee in the parking lot. I've been there, man. Look, and I'll tell you what, that I love those moments where these people that we watch on TV and the people that we, you know, idolize growing up, or the people that are like the moments LeBron has with his son. I love seeing these people that are in the spotlight do like normal dad stuff and normal mom stuff and normal people stuff. And it's just like, oh yeah, you know what? I've been there too. And he might have millions and millions and millions of dollars in this job with all this pressure and be coaching a game where their NCAA tournament hopes might be on the line. But you know, when your son says he's got to pee, someone's got to take him to pee, because I don't want to be that dad that has to change him on the sideline while I'm trying to call out whether or not I want, you know, Jordan Murphy to run a post up here or not.
Do you think LeBron's like had to take a leak in the parking lot lately?
No, but I bet that I guarantee he's got three little boys. I guarantee there's at some point in his life where one of his sons was like, oh, Daddy, I really have to pee. And he's let him pee someplace that was, I bet every parent has done that at some point. Did you ever do that?
I'm trying to think if I ever had to do that with my daughter and like let her pee somewhere.
I'll tell you what, if you are listening to this right now, leave a comment in iTunes and tell me about the funniest time that you had a near incident with your child when they almost went to the bathroom and you had to find a way to save it. I want to see if anyone can better my when it's 30 degrees out, letting my son pee in a parking lot. I cannot wait for these. Please give me the best stories you got.
There's got to be better ones. I mean, I'm sure there's like elite level ones, somewhere. I don't know where, but like, you know, long lines or stuff like that. Who knows?
All right. So this is the Monday Overreactions podcast. We're already 25 minutes in and we haven't even talked about the games from this weekend. So let's kind of roll through these really quick. Who are you more worried about at this point? Michigan after losing at Iowa, or Michigan State after they lost at home to Indiana?
I had a hard time putting either one of those as like an elite top three, five, like, I don't know. My top three have been pretty consistent over the last month. And I never put Michigan in it. I never put Michigan State in it. So to me, they're next tier. And my top three, in whatever order you want to put them in, are Virginia, Gonzaga, Duke. And now Gonzaga, with a caveat of a healthy Killian Tilly, he's not there yet, but hopefully he gets there in the next 4 weeks or so. So Michigan State and Michigan were always in the next tier for me. I'd say I'm more worried about Michigan because Michigan State has the better point guard. So for me, I love Cassius Winston. It's point guard play for me in the NCAA tournament. And while I love Xavier Simpson as a defender, I just don't feel like Michigan, we've said this, or I've said this in my podcast, Simpson, Teske. There's too many question marks for me with Michigan's offense.
Yeah, you had when you had Robbie Hummel on, you had a really good conversation about that. If you guys want to go and listen to that podcast. So I agree with everything you just said. And when it comes to what actually happened this weekend, I'm not worried about either of those games or the results, and it doesn't really knock them too much, in my opinion, for a couple of reasons. One, with Michigan, like you lost a road game where you got a rough whistle in the first half. All your big guys went to the bench, and then Iowa's big guys came in and like kicked the ass of your backups, right? Luka Garza and Ryan Creedell looked like they were, you know, Akeem Olajuwon and Shaquille O'Neal against whoever Michigan had in Brandon Johns or whoever it was. And that's just one of those things that happens on the road in league play. Yep. There's a reason why it's so hard to go undefeated in conference play. And it's exactly because of what happened with Michigan there. And Iowa, you know, believe it or not, they're 17-5. They're probably a top 25 team. That's a good basketball team. And you went on the road, you got in foul trouble, you didn't play well, and you got your ass kicked. That's going to happen sometimes. With Michigan State, to me, that's like the perfect example of, you know how everyone calls basketball a make or miss game? That what happened in that game is a perfect example of it. Because Indiana, like, for some reason, that's the game they decided to show up and play defense and play hard and play tough and play with confidence. And you know what they did? They were shooting 25% from three in Big Ten play. In the second half, they hit six in a row. They were 7 of 10 in the second half of overtime from three. And while they did that, Michigan State shot 8 for 22 from the free throw line. Right? So the way that the game played out wasn't necessarily different than what maybe Tom Izzo imagined or what Archie Miller imagined. But what happened was all those wide open threes that Indiana had been missing for the last month, they made them. All the free throws at Michigan State, by the way, they entered the game shooting 74% from three. All the free throws that they'd been making, they ended up missing those. And while all that was happening, Indiana actually had like their best defensive, best rebounding, best toughness game since I don't even know when, maybe when they played Louisville. And you put all that together, and those are the kind of things that lead to a loss. So if I'm Tom Izzo, I'm more than anything else, I'm just worried about the free throw shooting. And if I'm Archie Miller, I'm still worried about like where my team is right now. But I'm happy with the fact that they finally stopped playing like, you know.
Soft.
Yeah, they finally stopped playing like that. Does that make sense?
Morgan. Yeah, and without Juwan Morgan. Like when he went down, I was like, all right, they got no shot. That was that was a shocker for me, is they could win that game without Juwan Morgan. They're arguably their best player.
Probably but you know why it was important? Because Deron Davis, they need Deron Davis just for any kind of like front court depth, and they don't have it. And you know what? Deron Davis kind of matched up better with Michigan State because like he's big and physical and strong, which isn't really what Juwan Morgan is. And they were playing against Xavier Tillman and Nick Ward. Like you needed a big physical body in there, and it kind of – I don't want to say like they're better off without him against Michigan State because like that's not true, but they were better off with Deron Davis being forced to play 25 minutes. How about this? I didn't even realize this. He played 15 minutes in all of January, Deron Davis.
Because he's been hurt. Yeah. He's been hurt and he was overweight. And yeah, no, they've got nothing out of him lately. So if they can get something out of Deron Davis, get Morgan back, and Finnessy's got to start to play better again. He just hasn't been the same since a concussion.
Are we sure he's like 100% back and he's still not playing?
No, I don't think he is. I honestly, he hasn't looked right. He has not looked right since a concussion. I mean, he was terrible against Michigan State. So I don't know. I mean, I like Michigan State. I don't love them. Like if you're telling me right now, who do you want come March, Michigan, Kentucky or Michigan State? I'm taking Kentucky.
Who do I want to play or who do I want to, like, bet on?
Who am I taking? Yeah, who am I betting
on? Oh, yeah, I'm taking Kentucky. I thought you said you wanted to play Kentucky, and I was like, you've been drinking, Goodman? I know it's 5 o'clock somewhere, but.
No, I'm back on the Kentucky winning it all train.
You think they win it all?
I don't know. Well, I'm back in the fact that they can win it all. How's that? No, I'm not. I got to see who the matchups are. Like, I can't say win it all until you see matchup. Right. So everybody always
Unless it's Duke. Duke is the only one where I can say, yes, they can win it all regardless of what the matchup is. And that's just because fucking Zion Williamson.
Right. I mean, and just like that intimidation. Like, Zion's just so much better than I thought. He's just so much better. And I'm coming out with something later this week. I talked to 12 guys who guarded him so far this season. And it was fun to do. It was fun to kind of listen to all these guys, how they would guard them, what they thought of him. You know, my first question was like, what do you think when you first saw him? And, you know, most of them were like, well, a lot of them were like, he was shorter than I thought. A lot of them were like, he was so wide and big and strong. And then, you know, like, again, how to guard him. Well, ultimately, most of them are like, well, you want to give him space, but you can't give him too much space because then he's going to drive you. So what do? You know, and I'm not sure there's an easy answer here. You want to obviously have him settle for jump shots. But again, if you give him too much space, he's not settling for jump shots. He knows he doesn't want a jump shot. He's going to try to drive you if he's got space.
Yeah, and all he has to do is take two dribbles, put his shoulder into your chest, and go up with that little floating jump hook, and he can, like, weave around you, and it turns into a layup. Like, he jumps from 12 feet away, and it's a finger roll. That's what happens when you're an athlete like that. Yeah, when I saw him in person for the very first time, my first thought was, like, he was kind of far away, and I was like, wow, he's not quite as tall as I thought he was. And then I walked by him, and I was like, oh, no, he actually is as tall as I thought he was. He's just so wide that he doesn't look like he's tall at all.
Correct.
Like, it looks like he's kind of squat, but he's not. Like, he's like a legit 6'6", 6'7".
Yeah, he's probably with shoes 6'7".
Yes.
You know, that's what he'll measure. He'll measure 6'7" with shoes.
And he looked like, if you're just kind of watching him from the sidelines, it looks like he's 6'4", because it doesn't look like he has very long arms, and it doesn't look like he has very long legs. And he still kind of has, like, this weird waddle when he runs. And
he doesn't run athletic. He does not run athletic.
No.
Am I wrong?
No, you're not.
It's crazy. I mean, that's the funniest part. But, you know, the other part of talking to all these guys was, like, them raving about him and how he carries himself on and off the court. Every one of them. Not one kid had anything bad to say about him on or off the record about, like, how he, you know, like, they all were like, he doesn't really talk any trash. Like, none of them. Crazy. If I jump like that, I would be talking so much shit from start to finish. People would be like, I would get 100 technicals over the course of the year, just nonstop talking. And this dude very rarely, like, he'll celebrate a good dunk and you know.
Yeah, I was going to say that it's not a competitiveness thing. Like, a lot of guys that don't talk, it's a competitiveness thing, or whether or not they care. Like, you could tell he cares. Yeah. Just watch the emotion that comes out of him, like, when something happens in any game, especially when he's in Cameron, with the way that place gets energized. Like, you could just see it, like, flowing out of him. He cares.
No, it's awesome.
He's competitive.
And that's the thing. He gets other guys pumped up, and he cares about his teammates. When they make a play, you can tell, like, he's genuinely excited. So I think it's easier for RJ Barrett to, in turn, not be envious, not be as jealous. I'm sure he is, because RJ Barrett came in thinking he was going to be the National Player of the Year, that all the talk was going to be about him. It's not. It's about Zion. But it's got to be easier to take if you're RJ, because Zion's Zion.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. All right, so you mentioned Kentucky. They got smoked, embarrassed, humiliated in the first game of the season by Duke. And now it looks like they're back to being a top five team. I think that you can say a lot of people jumped off the North Carolina bandwagon when they lost at home to Louisville by 21 points. And they've won now, I want to say, six in a row. And they just beat Louisville in the Yum Center by 10. Kansas, I think we were all ready to write them off after, what was it? They lost at home to Texas, their second straight loss. And then they came back and they just absolutely mollywopped Texas Tech at home. I think they ended up winning by 16, but they were up by like 25 in the second half. That wasn't really a game at all. So where do you stand on those three teams? And if you had to rank them right now in terms of the most likely to win a title in March, or just the team that you're most comfortable with thinking they can win six in a row, how would it go?
Kentucky, Carolina, Kansas. Agree?
Yes, for the most part, yes. It all depends on – so we talked about with Indiana, like, it's a make-or-miss game. When Kentucky shoots the way – that they shot on Saturday, they become a very different team to me, because all of a sudden you cannot double team Dedrick Lawson. The reason they were struggling is because they just threw two people at Dedrick Lawson. LeGerald Vick wasn't shooting it. Quentin Grimes wasn't shooting it. Devin Dotson wasn't shooting it. The only guy that was really shooting it was Ochai Agbaji. And even he was like, he's not like a natural shooter. Like, he's a guy that can make them, but you don't want him to be the guy that you rely on to be the floor spacer, especially when, like, Marcus Garrett, who is a complete non-shooter, is on the floor. Against Texas Tech, they made 6 of their first 8, and they made 13 of 30 for the game. Gerald Vick hit 3. Devin Dotson hit 3. Quentin Grimes hit 3. Dedrick Lawson hit 3. All of a sudden, you have all these shooters out there, and if those guys are making threes and you can't double-team Dedrick Lawson, ooh, boy. Because there's a lot of things that Dedrick Lawson like cannot do that makes me worry about him as an NBA player. But if you're going to let him go one-on-one within 12 feet against anybody in the country, like he's going to get you buckets. He's going to go out there and score. He's going to work people over.
But let's be honest. Let's be honest. Is Kansas going to be – are they going to shoot 13 of 30 in most games from three? No. Like, Quentin Grimes has shown himself to be more of a non-shooter than a shooter from three. Dotson, again, inconsistent shooter. Vic, you have no idea. No idea. Like, Gerald Vic is, to me, the biggest enigma in college basketball. You have no idea which player is showing up. So that's where – and their bench just isn't good enough. Like, no, Charlie Moore is a good, solid backup who can play, like, 6-8 minutes a game. Like, David McCormick's not ready. Mitch Lightfoot, again, a good backup who can play 6 or 8 minutes a game. KJ Lawson, same thing. So it was going to be their strength. Their depth was going to be – because everybody's like, oh, Charlie Moore averaged 13 points a game at Cal his freshman year. Yeah, but he's just a piece. He's like a third point. Remember, people thought Charlie Moore might start over Dotson.
I thought there was a chance.
At numbers.
I'm taking the L on that one.
They look at numbers. You looked at numbers, and you're like, yeah, all right, he put up great numbers as a freshman. So, to me, again, I just think their margin for error is so, so, so small. And they're going to have that game where Grimes isn't going to show up, and LeGerald's not going to show up, and they just don't have enough. They don't have enough. Carolina can afford that. Like, they can afford a couple guys having bad games and still having a chance. Like, Kenny Williams has not had a great year. We could agree to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they've got other guys. Cam Johnson's been really good. Luke May's better than he's been. Kobe White is capable of going for 20. And Nasir Little, well, he's not what we thought he was, but he's still like a decent sixth man.
Yeah, my thing with Little is I've made this point before, so I won't go too deep into it, but he is a guy that works best as kind of like that small ball for what OG yes. Anunoby is in the NBA. And with the way that Roy Williams' offense works, he needs pure shooter scores on the wings at the three or a playmaker. He needs someone like a Justin Jackson or someone like a Theo Pinson on the wing. Or he needs you to be a big man like a Kennedy Meeks or an Isaiah Hicks. And the problem is he's like, it's old school basketball. And when you play old school basketball, someone like Nasir Little turns into a tweener. So he's playing in a system that doesn't allow him to be the versatile kind of piece that he is. And I don't think Roy's figured out how to maximize what Little is. And I don't think Little has quite figured out what he can do to kind of work into that mold. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, Roy's whole deal is always playing two bigs.
Yep.
And he never wants to. People, you know, his assistant coaches eventually wear him down on it, but he doesn't really want to do it. But their best lineup is clearly, to me, go throw Nasir at the four, let him be able to beat guys off the bounce. And he still can't do it easily, but at least he stands a shot where if you're putting him against three men, he can't beat anybody off the bounce, and they don't really post him. They don't post him at all where I think they should, because you might be able to get him an easy bucket and get him going that way. So I like this Carolina team. I've said that. I know they've had their ups and downs. I don't love them, but I wouldn't be shocked. If you told me this Carolina team got to the Final Four, I would not be shocked at all.
The only reason I would be a little bit surprised is that Kobe White doesn't really make players better, and he's a little bit of a, like, I mean, when you're a scorer and kind of a volume scorer, you're kind of like streaky by nature, and he's also a freshman, so he's a little bit more streaky than people expect. And I think that he can get taken out of the game if you run it. Like, if you look at some of the best teams in the country, they all have great defensive point guards. And I think he's the kind of guy, like, if he runs into a Trey Jones or a Xavier Simpson or an Ashton Hagans or someone along those lines, it's the kind of thing that would be bad for him. All right, real quick on Kentucky. why are you back on them as heavy as you are at this point? Like, what changed with you between now and what they were, like, let's say, after the Seton Hall loss?
PJ Washington, for one.
He's been so good.
So good. So good. So, I mean, like really good. Tyler Hero for another. You know, he doesn't have to necessarily make shots now. Like, he doesn't have to make threes. He could score in other ways, but I still think, again, he's more than capable of making threes like he did against Florida. Keldon Johnson's a little bit erratic. But, like, it's not all about Keldon now having to play hard. Like, I feel like that's what it was early, right? It was like, well, Keldon Johnson's the only one really bringing it and playing hard. Now PJ's bringing it and playing hard. And obviously Ashton Hagans is much better, especially for this Kentucky team at the point, because he can just be a kind of floor general, and he gets better at it every game and defend. And they need that. So, I like the way they fit together. I've said that all year, like before the year. Felt like, all right, they got point guards, multiple point guards, multiple wings, multiple bigs. I just felt like it was harder to find a major weakness with this Kentucky team than any other team in the country. And I'm not sure that's still the case, but I think it is until Gonzaga has a healthy Killian Tilly.
Yeah, my thing with them was I didn't know how they were going to be able to find what their best five was, given the pieces that they had, because they had so many different guys that excelled at certain roles. And I think that we figured out pretty quickly that they can be okay if they don't have Nick Richards as kind of like the vertical spacer, rim protector, and use just Reed Travis because of his power and his ability to rebound and the fact that he just murders people in the post. And they've basically become like a grind you down defensive. Like, they are so good defensively. It's hard to believe that this team, doing what they're doing, once gave up 118 points in a basketball game. It's hard to believe that, like, PJ Washington, after what he did in that first game, getting completely humiliated by Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett and Cam Reddish, is out here. Like, I think you can make an argument that if the season was just the last 3 weeks, he'd be a first team All-American. He's been unbelievable. Like, he's against Mississippi State, he had 21-6 and hit 4 threes against a team that played 2 bigs. He spaced the floor against them. Against Kansas, when they were playing those 3 wings, he absolutely murdered anybody that Kansas put on him in the paint, and he made Kansas go back to playing 2 bigs. They had, like, for most of the second half, they had Mitch Lightfoot at the 4 because PJ Washington was just abusing whoever they put on him. And then against Florida, like, the thing that was so impressive about that comeback is they completely shut him down. Florida had no answer for anything on the offensive end of the floor over the course of, like, the last 12, 13, 14 minutes of that game. Completely ate him up. So
Kayvon Allen, man. Kayvon Allen he's hard to, like, I always want more watching him.
Yeah. Florida, what happened to Jalen Hudson? Where did he just fell off a cliff?
Toughness. I think Mike White I think his big thing with, like, a Jalen Hudson is he wants to, you know, and maybe that's why he left Virginia Tech, because he just wasn't tough enough to play for Buzz Williams.
Fair enough.
But it looked good, looked good last year at times. And Kayvon Allen, man, I felt like he could be a first team all FCC player because of the way he shoots the ball, and, 1-for-7 against Kentucky. They had nobody that they could rely on to get a bucket down the stretch while Kentucky was just dominating.
Yeah, they just ate him up defensively. Anyways, Goodman, tell us where we can find that piece on Zion Williamson. Tell me where we can find you on iTunes. Give them all the details.
All the details. Watch Stadium. That'll be where the Zion story hits later this week, hopefully Wednesday. The podcast, Good and Plenty podcast, where actually tomorrow's pod will be none other, and it's a weird one. I try to kind of mix it up a little bit. Chris Harris Jr., the Denver Broncos corner, 4-time All-Pro corner, is a huge Kansas hoops fan. And I felt like the day after the Super Bowl, let's talk a little bit about the Super Bowl, break it down. He had some good comments about Zion playing in the NFL, where he would play, how he would be. Gronk, whether he'll retire or not, whether he thinks he will, the toughest wide receivers he has to face. So a little different. Mix it up a little bit rather than the boring podcast that you put together with me on it.
And I guarantee that my podcast will have more Bill Walton stories than your podcast with Chris Harris. I don't know about anything else, but I guarantee we have more Bill Walton stories.
Yeah, we just go. I mean, that's the fun part. Like, I don't even know if you have to write anything down before you and I do a podcast together, because we just start out telling stories. And then it just kind of morphs into something.
Literally, this is what I have written down. Michigan schools, Kansas, Kentucky, UNC. That's it.
Yeah, you covered it. We did. We hit on all of them. We just had to, you know, try to condense it a little bit because, you know, again, I think, you know, people, I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like with some of these podcasts, they'd rather hear stories than anything else. And that's what I try to do. I try to, like, if I'm going to get a podcast, I'm going to have some stories. And then we're going to talk basketball. And that's what I try to do with whether it's a guest or whether it's just me talking. I feel like, you know, I don't know. That's if I'm listening to a podcast, I want to hear some funny stories or some entertaining stories or some informative stories. And then, yeah, I want to hear the opinion, hopefully, of the person that's hosting the podcast, unless it's you, and then I don't care about the opinion.
Well, if you guys want to hear some funny stories and some bad opinions, go find Good and Plenty on iTunes. Jeff, I appreciate the time, my man. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Follow me on Twitter.
Give me 5 stars.